Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shift podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome.
Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. I'm your host, Christina Castagnini. When I started my podcast, I knew one of the main things I wanted to do was to have real people on here discussing their real life experiences with food, body image, and weight. I personally know all too well how lonely and isolating living with an eating disorder can feel, yet also know the impact it can have on you once you know someone else is out there who knows just what you're going through, because they are too. Not that you ever want someone else to be going through it, but there's just something that happens when another person out there shares their story and you can relate to it. There's just this sense of connectedness. Some part of you feels different. Maybe it's a sense of relief in knowing you're not alone in your struggle, or finally feeling a hint of hope when you never thought you could feel any, or whatever it is, you just know something feels different, better. There's just so much secrecy with disordered eating, eating disorders, and the struggles people have with body image and weight. So many people hold in what keeps them trapped in a life of pain and misery. And once we start opening up, sharing our truths, our realities, we start to become free. Things start to shift and they change. I thought long and hard before I recorded my first podcast about whether I, as the host, wanted to share my own story. It's a fine line to cross as a therapist to do that. But I also wanted to hold true to discussing what is real on here. That was my reality for years. And being in recovery is also my reality. And those of us who are in recovery need to be loud and vocal to those who don't believe they can get there, because you can. I believe those of us who are out there sharing our stories need to be heard, and heard loud. To encourage everyone out there who is still suffering in silence and is sick of their secrets to know they're not alone, to know there is hope. Which is why I'm so very honored to have a guest with us today, someone who is sure to have you walking away after the show feeling a sense of hope and inspiration. Ali Spots de Lazar is a licensed marriage and family therapist, a licensed professional clinical counselor, a certified eating disorder specialist, and a certified eating disorder specialist supervisor with a private practice in Los Angeles. Ali has presented workshops at international conferences, graduate schools, and hospitals. She's published articles in academic journals and trade magazines, and authored the book Meaningful, 23 Life-Changing Stories of Conquering Dieting, Weight, and Body Image Issues. Her professional-related volunteerism includes co-chairing committees for both the International Association of Eating Disorders Professionals and the Academy for Eating Disorders, and creating Shake It for Self-Acceptance, a series of public events sparking conversations about self-acceptance through fun, motivating messages, and flash mob dance. She was named the 2017 IDEP Member of the Year, and Mayor Garcetti recognized July 13, 2017 as Shake It for Self-Acceptance Day in the city of Los Angeles. Ali, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Christina.
So you're really inspiring. I came across your book and I just went, oh my goodness, this woman just put her story out there. And I'm just curious, how was that for you to do that?
Oh man, gosh, you know, I think that you probably really understand as a therapist, we have our private lives, we have our professional lives, we have our ethics codes. There's a lot to juggle when it comes to sharing sharing personal stuff. So how it was to put out there was liberating, because I'd never really looked at how and why did I get better. I think I've just, you know, been so grateful to be in a space where I have so much freedom around things, the food and body issues that had kept me kind of in a prisoner for so long. So it was liberating to break that down and then to have the knowledge as a therapist of kind of what the inner workings of that was cool. But then there was also, oh my gosh, what do I share? What do I not share? And that's tricky, because not only do people who have eating and body image issues often have this piece inside that compares. So the last thing I wanted to be was anything triggering. And yet I also knew I needed to share pieces of my story so that, you know, if I'm asking all these people to share their personal, sometimes private, sometimes not really spoken about ever pieces of their life, then I thought, well, I've had the whole DSM section on adult eating disorders. So I kind of feel like it's appropriate to not be removed, but to actually set up the whole book by sharing kind of the span of what they look like for me, from non-clinical to serious clinical, to treatment worthy clinical, to treatment avoiding, but treatment worthy clinical. Yeah. So it's, that's a very long answer, but it was actually just a really beautiful experience. And then it has cracked me up a few times since, because as hard as I tried to make the book not triggering, you know, of course you're still going to get that space where somebody who's in a vulnerable space is going to feel triggered by something mentioned. I mean, they can feel triggered by driving down the street with all the freeze your fat off billboards, you know?
So true. And you just don't know what that's going to be.
Yeah. And so the other piece is I was, you know, thank you for asking this question, because my head's just kind of flooding with thoughts about this that I lived with and swam with for, you know, a couple years as I was workshopping this book. My first clinical experience was pretty much following Carolyn Costin around, you know, presentation to presentation, until she brought me on at Montanito. And there, they were a rare treatment facility at the time that was open about having healing, being recovered, being able to talk about the experiences. So I've always had kind of an idea about what's appropriate to share, what's not appropriate, what engages competition, what just instills hope. And so I used that a lot as I was figuring out, you know, what have I disclosed throughout the years? What feels safe? What feels inspiring? You know, so I think I'm just so, so grateful for having that as my original diving board.
And that is such an interesting thing to say, because I think there, at least I have found that there's really two schools of thought with therapy. It's like, either you don't share anything about yourself as a therapist, because then there's that risk of, you know, there's that the joke out there, like, oh, therapists are just trying to heal themselves in therapy and they really think it about themselves, versus like, you don't want to cross that line, versus like what you're saying, which is, hey, be real and share some about yourself, and you can really connect with people you're working with, and it's much more powerful, right?
Yeah. You know, even in grad school, they were very, very sparing. And, you know, grad school at this point was a long time ago. And I want to ask you, I want to plant the seed, because would love to know how you kind of figure out what you'll disclose. I mean, because there's a difference between, you know, if somebody likes my shoes, I have no problem being like, Marshalls, DSW. Although the tag is usually still on them, so they see that. But there's a difference between that kind of just kind of settling in moment that some, you know, that's just kind of a process for some in the room. And then there's also, my rule is, is this going to somehow help this person? Is this for their best interest, or is this because something inside of me wants to share about me? And if it's the second, then it's not to be shared.
Oh, absolutely.
And I often will, it's really cool. Like, I don't want to give away any specifics, but I will often ask when I'm with somebody who I don't know that well yet, I'll say, you know, what did that feel like? And I've had times in which someone said, you know what, that didn't feel safe. It felt like it flipped it to you, even when I used my gauge. So that's kind of how I try to work things out, is it in their best interest? And then check.
Well, and I think that's so important, right? And much of how I feel with eating disorders is there's so much secrecy, which is what I love about the book, is it just exudes so much the power of what it's like to divulge all the secrets and let them out. And it's so powerful, right? Just to have that connection and just to go, oh, here it is. Here's all my stuff, right? Just to let it out.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not going to speak for you, but I know that with my patients, when they're finally just able to open up about it and just go, here it is. And I know that was like that for me too, just to go, it was so scary to talk about all the stuff I was thinking and doing. Cause I thought, oh my gosh, this is so shameful. No one else is doing this. They're like, this
really
is crazy, right? Just to go here.
Do you remember, you know, and feel free to pass on this, but do you remember what made you first choose to not, like, there is a choice about sharing. Do you remember when you actually shared a secret about that might help you see a different view, but in your own journey?
I do, actually. I remember thinking, okay, what if I just said something? Just one little thing. I was like tiptoeing in the water. Like, all right, I'm going to put this out there and see what happens. Because it was so scary. I always hid everything. I was like, I had to put on, you know, the perfect, you know, mask. I had to look perfect, right? The perfect grades. Just look perfect. Nobody could know anything was wrong. No cracks in the system. You know, just letting one friend know, hey, this is what I'm doing. And to have just empathy, right? Just, okay. Okay, just call me and let me know when you feel like you want to do that again. We'll talk it through. Just don't do that again.
Oh my gosh. So you chose someone who could hold your secret with honor.
Right. And then became my safe person. And I remember that being so wonderful, and it really helped.
Oh, that is beautiful. As you see in my book, I didn't necessarily have the wisdom to choose safe people. Do you remember when I mentioned the one who would stand in the doorway and continue talking to me as I, you know, got rid of my food? That wasn't, yeah. So I think, I hope that part of, you know, without putting a lot of the book, I did by gut. But now I'm learning how to put words to what I was hoping. And I think one of the things that I hope is that one of those storytellers becomes someone's secret holder if they don't have someone safe.
Yeah. And it's so important, I think. And I guess maybe part of why somebody may have eating disorders or struggle with food is because maybe there aren't safe people around them. Right? This food becomes maybe their comfort or their place to escape, or, you know, that's what some of the problem is. There's nothing safe around them.
Or people don't know, you know, I don't think that anyone who held my, you know, at some point I was selective about who I shared with, but it was such a part of my life that I kind of used it as a this sounds a little weird, but it was a little bit of a screening. Like, if you couldn't hang with me in my maintenance practices, then that was fine. Because my maintenance practices were a better friend than what I felt like most people were.
Interesting.
That feels so strange to say. I'm like, okay, we're swimming in a sea I don't think I've explored. And that's okay, because along the way, then I started to acquire people who you know, I don't think that they were bad people. They just didn't know how to handle my maintenance practices. They didn't know how to say something in a way that maybe could have busted it, or maybe they were damaging. I have no idea looking back, but I think it's really foreign to people to push against the grain of diet culture. I think it's really foreign to say to someone, hey, you know what? I know that you think you're doing the right thing and that you're just seeking to become better and look better and be more powerful and feel more powerful, but I think you've gone overboard, or there's something extreme happening because it no longer fits in the bell curve of diet culture. You're like, I'm worried about you. And I think that might be really hard for people to see, recognize, or say something, because for many of us who get just so freaking fatigued trying to find that solution that finally works and lets us, you know, I'm not saying everybody's out to feel better, but what is underneath healthy food practices? What is underneath dieting? What is underneath body image struggles? I think we want to feel better, feel maybe safer in the world. So, you know, I think it feels probably really unsafe. I put myself in the position of the, you know, roommate who did used to watch me and my practices. And that poor thing probably honestly had no idea what to say and may have just offered the best comfort that she knew how.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right. We are steeping in this diet culture where I think even people who are engaging in their eating disorders don't know, is this what everyone else is doing? And I'm just doing what is out there, right? They don't know that I'm doing something that is hurting me. I'm just doing what everyone else is doing, and I'm failing over and over and over and over again. And there's this light bulb moment, I think, sometimes where, you know, me as a therapist said, do you realize this is an eating disorder? It's like, no, it's not. I just keep failing. I'm doing it wrong. I need more willpower, you know?
Yeah.
No, it's beyond that.
But, you know, and then I think we honestly have a medical system, and I very much value our healers in the world. So I'm not saying this again, but I think you just nailed a huge piece, is when weight loss is posed as a solution to so many even physical ailments. And then on top of it, we're not screening. I think you and I were talking about this off record, but I want to bring it onto record, which is, you know, we will often ask as therapists, we will say, you know, when was your last physical? Because we want to make sure that your body is not what's causing your anxiety. Let's say someone comes in for depression, anxiety, moodiness, whatever. We're like, okay, let's make sure it's not your thyroid. Let's make sure, you know, please go to your doctor, run all your labs. Let's make sure it's not coming from the inside. Where is the next question of what is your fuel like during the day? Are you keeping it steady? Your neurotransmitters, your moodiness. Think about the Hangry commercials, those funny commercials. Well, maybe they're not funny, but those commercials where the people are like super, super hangry and angry, and then they become nice after they eat their whatever. Well, if you're living in a space where your body's depleted of energy, you may just naturally be raw, impatient, experiencing things that could easily be pathologized, could get a label of aggression, could get, you know, a diagnostic level. But what's up with the food? Like, why is that question not the second thing that everybody asks right after, when's your last physical? How were your labs? What's your eating like? How many meals a day do you eat?
Well, even beyond that, right? I'll ask people and I say, oh, I eat, you know, 3 meals a day, or I eat, you know, this, but they don't get even more nuanced. They're like, what does that even look like?
Right. Like, I eat 2 meals a day. So you go to bed, you stop eating at what time at night, and then don't eat again until late afternoon? Do you like, you do, no wonder you're fuzzy thinking during the day and cranky, cranky, crank, crankers.
But you know, I eat this huge meal, and then, you know, you get more nuance. It's like a huge meal to someone in my office
Yes.
A huge meal, in all reality, are two very different things.
Oh my gosh. I learned so early as a therapist to ask what a quote unquote binge was, because I learned the subjective binge of, you know, two bites of X.
Yeah.
So you, just thank you for introducing all of that subjectivity that comes with this and how messed up it is out there with, now we've got intuitive fasting, we've got this fasting, this cut out, like, no wonder people think they're doing the right thing for so very long. And I just really ask any of us to be forgiving. Like, it may not, so often it's not you failing mastering your life.
No.
It's what's been offered. They're not great fits.
And what kills me is, you know, all these books out there are these things that say, well, it's scientifically proven that this is better for you or this works. And it's like, I wonder what quote unquote works means.
Well, and then, you know, you're so right. What does it mean that it works? And then when you think about how different bodies are, when we listen to those commercials on TV where they're like, weight loss or weight gain may happen, diarrhea or constipation may happen. I mean, our bodies are so different that I really believe so often we have our unique formulas that we really need to find an experiment with what enhances our life, not makes it smaller, not makes us feel like bigger failures. There's plenty naturally in life that will do that during the day.
And I think that's the best part about, like, reading your book is all these people have such different life stories and experiences. And, you know, that's what is great, is to hear, okay, what was this person's experience? What was that person's experience? What did they go through? Like, just to know, like, other people going through these illnesses, and it's painful. It's horrible, but to know, like, you can get past it. You can go through it. Right?
And thank you.
Just to connect with that and go, okay, you know, because I think there's that, you said the wonderful word of hope. Because you get, I don't know if you found this, there was that hopelessness. I think a lot of people have this is never going to end. I'm going to be struggling with this forever because me and the failure, like,
yeah,
I'm doing something wrong. It's this hopeless. It's never worked, never going to work, never going to find that thing. And this trajectory is like ongoing forever, right? But to have, like, reading your book, it's like, there is hope out there. Or there is.
Thank you.
Into this. There's a way to get past and through this.
And it's not always, I think what was so difficult in the writing of it was what is often offered. Do try to say that five times fast. Is actually what will get us more hopeless. And that's the interesting piece. Each story in the note from Allie, I go through what I believe traditionally this person would have been offered as a remedy, or thought like as a remedy to fix what was not working. And yet they had to find their solutions. And through it, you know, I use the analogy of this book is built like a store. Everything in it offers hope, healing, opportunities, experiments, nothing you have to do. This is not a program or a plan. Like, that was something that was so important to me. And you know, it doesn't work in the marketing, honestly, to not be like, this is foolproof. This is your way. It's scientifically proven. No, you may find nothing in the book. It's true. But so far, people seem to find connection, hope. I tried to limit the pain so that you would experience the triumph and the joy of that, but not get mired in the layers and layers of pain that often come in these kind of books. You know, I look at long memoirs and I'm like, how did you do that? You know, it's like fascinating to me. I think that it may even be a part of why I love short stories and Chicken Soup for the Soul. And you can keep it, you know, for slow readers and like me, you can keep it in the hope zone and you can keep it in a space where just enough gets shared, but not so much that it feels less helpful. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Christina, do you remember for you, do you remember ever shifting to a feeling of hope? I think that my hope didn't come really until after. Like, I just thought I was going to stay with these struggles forever. It was just a way of life. And I think that's kind of something diet culture gives us. So I was just like, okay, whatever. I'm going to go to my grave. Possibly, you know, possibly I might even damage myself early from this stuff and whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just my way of life. It's my maintenance, how I do it. My hope actually came after I'd gotten well into recovery.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's when I was like, oh my gosh, this life is kind of so amazing, even when it's down. This is so much better and so much more authentic and so much truer and deeper and more awesome than that shit.
Oh, yeah.
When did you, like, in your own healing journey, because we're all on healing journeys, whatever they're for, mm-hmm. when did you shift into hope? And it's okay. Again, I don't mean to pressure you on the spot.
Oh, no. I mean, the first five episodes, my podcast is me sharing everything. So I'm fine. I think that's the reason I started the podcast was to be real, right? To really say, like, this is it. I think I had three big moments. One was when I met with a nutritionist. She really broke down all my fear foods into the components of the food and really educated me on, hey, what are you so afraid of? Let's talk about it. This is what each part does for your body and why it's beneficial, right? Like, what are you afraid of this? Like, let's go through it. This is, you know, it was like pizza or something. It was like, you know, this, the tomato sauce does this. And it was just like, I was like, oh my gosh, why am I afraid of this food? This is fantastic. And I kind of had hope, like, I can eat food and not be afraid of it. Awesome. Like, that was like step one, right?
Yeah.
The next one was when I heard, I was far enough out and I heard people talking about dieting and I went, oh God, that sounds awful. Instead of before, it was like, cool, tell me more about that, right? Like, I want to do
this,
you know?
Yes.
Remember that? Did you have a moment like that?
Oh my gosh. I remember these, I had gotten in this group of females and it was surrounded by music and something I love. I love the Andrews Sisters and I love old music. And we were all talking about music and just like geeking out on it, except they kept talking about their diets and cleanses and what they were going to do next. And I remember thinking how so incredibly bored I was. And so angry that my beautiful topic of one microphone and three people blending and just like, oh, I was such a, like, they ruined it. Their dieting ruined my hour and a half. And I couldn't wait to get out of there. And I knew there wasn't a space to talk to them about another way because there was not an opening. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, so I just kept trying to focus on the orchestral notes that we were talking about. And you know what I mean? I kept trying to focus on what I loved learning about. And it just, and that was when I thought, oh gosh, you know what? I'm going to be a lot more isolated socially, but how great, because it's going to be so interesting whenever I connect with someone who's not doing this.
Right?
Yes, that was hugely hopeful. But again, I'd been practicing non-behaviors and not, I mean, that stuff had already been put into a chest and had a few locks put on it. Like that, you know, the old Pirates treasures with the million locks that the cartoon characters have to open up. Yeah. Question for you too on the triggering. When you did the five episodes, which I now I'm going to probably, you know, listen to after the fact. But you know, I've known of you, so I knew enough of you. And then I met you, so I knew I wanted to come here and talk with you. But how did you figure out what was triggering to share, what was helpful to share, especially just talking about it?
I honestly, I just
talked.
Did it. I just said, you know what, here it is. And I think I had gotten to the point where I'd been at a hospital for 15 years. And I just said, you know what? I left. I just made the huge decision after that long to leave this career I'd established. And I went, you know what? If I left, I'm just going to leave and do something big. So, and I did feel that way. Like it's important to share my story.
Did you, feeling word, unburdened?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd shared enough with people over time that that part was gone, but I just felt like, look, if I'm going to do a podcast, people better know who I am. Right. Like, start out with that. Like, cause otherwise it's for you.
Yeah. And, some of my storytellers, it was, I picked them because I just had a sense that they might have a story. Cause it all just in a nutshell, it all started as a proof of concept. So I was trying to just see if this format could work. Like I had no idea I'd be adding the expert commentary at the end of the stories. You know, it just all really built from me exhausting people in my life with asking them to read it and see if it worked yet. But one thing that came back so often from people who had not talked about things or they had experienced shame or something bad had happened to them or was the sense of sharing it was relieving, sharing it and having someone look at it and give a different viewpoint, unburdened what was living inside of them.
That's so powerful.
And that's where I think our people, anybody out there, patients, clients, people, if you are holding something inside and you've chosen to hold it inside, ask yourself why, and is it really protecting you in the way that it needs to be, protecting you to be a secret, or is it burdening you? Because you can't have anyone unpack it when it's stuck in our brain. We can't have anyone with love say, well, are you kind of open to a different perspective on how you're seeing it? And it's okay if you don't agree. And that those kind of explorations, I believe, can really be the key to changing things and making your life more powerful and fulfilling. I'm trying not to use the word meaningful because I don't want to cheapen the yes, that was put as a title for a reason. But secrecy, I think, sometimes prevents us from connection and fullness. So anybody listening, just kind of an invitation to think about why are those things that we're holding secret? And is there anyone who maybe they could share it with that it would be reverently held and kindly, compassionately held so that you're not alone?
That is so important to hear for anybody. That is the key. You are only really as sick as your secrets. And for anyone, like you just said, asking yourself, what is the purpose of holding on to it?
Yeah.
I hear that so often. There's this fear, maybe even a fear of once they do open up, the fear of even letting go or changing, not having their eating disorder anymore.
Or their eating issues or their hours of exercise that have kept them company and kept them from relationships. In the book, there's a story about how her exercise and, you know, quest that kept her yo-yoing her weight all the time kept her actually from real relationships. So there's lots of functions of this, you know, these practices, and maybe in the pursuit we're saying, you know, this will help me have a better relationship because I'll be more confident. But really, is it keeping you from a relationship?
Maybe you don't know that until you really kind of take a step back and say, what is the purpose of this?
Yeah. Yeah. Another storyteller, something that happened to her, it really kept her such a powerful soul, like just a beautiful energy that always has something beautiful to share. And I think you would know it. In fact, you may even be thinking about which story this is. but something that happened to her privately about her body and her body image knocked her off her power. It knocked her off her authenticity. And it hurt so much that she couldn't share. So I'm so blessed she trusted me to let her story heal others. And I said, why did you do this? And that's what she said. She said, heck, if my pain can help others, this helped me sharing it.
Oh, wow. It's quite amazing, actually.
Yeah.
And I think that is exactly what you're talking about, is there in sharing, there is that connection and that understanding. And I think overcoming that fear, if it is, I don't know if she had fear or other people have fear in sharing, but just being able to do that. And it just, like you said, that word unburden, just being able to breathe. I'm like, oh, okay.
Right? Oh. Yeah. In fact, it's interesting as you were just saying that fear, I thought, you know, fear of what? What's underneath it? And, you know, I think so, that people who are quote unquote sensitive, and sensitive takes a really bum rap because I think sensitive is a fantastic trait. Sometimes it gets in the way and sometimes it truly helps us out. But I think that people who might experience a sensitivity may have really, really deep fears. Like, as I'm thinking about this, you know, that whole theory of the, you know, if this happens, then what do you believe? If this happens, then what do you believe? If this happens, then, I mean, till you literally you're to the point where you're living alone in an alley, nobody loves you, and a dog's peeing on your head. So I think that sometimes when that fear is there, if we have shame with the fear, you know, underneath it, it probably is something so deep that maybe, you know, maybe I am not capable. Maybe I am not lovable. Maybe I am not worthy. Maybe. And so the fear's there to protect those very, very, very vulnerable things. But often those very, very vulnerable things are healed through connection. One of the reasons I just fell in like with you, Christina, is when we talked, there was just like, we were just real.
And that is so true. I think just, and that's the whole point of why I wanted to do this podcast too, is like talking about real life issues and get real about eating disorders and disorder eating and body issues. Because if there's not that authenticity and people aren't talking about what it's really like, then there's a problem. Like, people who are listening, I want them to understand and hear real life stories and hear the real stories.
Yeah.
What's going on out there?
You know, it really is. And it's so hard. Gosh, we could talk for hours and days. I believe that it's really another reason that, like, now I can put a word to this book is the subjective experience of eating and body image struggles. And the reason why I don't always use the word eating disorders is because often people with actual diagnostic problems don't know they have them. Our society freaks out at mental health words, especially eating disorders. I have evidence of this because I have this body positivity, self-acceptance flash mob that when I originally was seeking a venue was refused constantly for Eating Disorder Awareness Week because private venues were not comfortable with the topic. And I was like, that's why we're doing this, is to take away stigma. What the hell? So we ended up finding a public space because free speech. So I really learned that I would like to talk in descriptions. In this book, you go on the journey and feel what these people are feeling. I want carers and boyfriends and wives to read these stories of these varied, diverse peoples and diverse backgrounds and different genders to experience what the struggle is, because it's not shallow. It's not about looks. It's not just about control. What's underneath control? Tired of easy summaries of what this is about and how to fix it and just eat. So that's another big piece of this, is giving people, the third section is called connections, because I also wanted to honor that carers, teachers, parents can do amazing support and be part of the healing process, whether someone is burdened with a clinical disorder they don't know is clinical, or just burdened daily with the bullshit of our dieting mentality culture and not feeling good enough. Something that I want to offer here that is, I wrote a blog a long time ago that was shared a lot, and it's now finally so old that I don't even think you can find it. But I try to help carers because I run a parent support group or a friends and family support group. And one of the analogies I make about somebody with eating issues, when they're powerful eating and body image issues, it can be like you, like, are you afraid of spiders? Are you afraid of snakes? What are you, Christina, afraid of or really uncomfortable around? Like an in-law, like just what is something, something you'd be repeatedly equally uncomfortable or terrified of? For me, it would be tarantulas. Oh my gosh, it would be tarantulas.
Tarantulas are scary.
They're terrifying. And I almost stepped on a rock that moved a while ago that like, oh my God, I freaked. Yeah, it was a tarantula. Ah! Okay. For somebody who has eating issues that are really powerful, it can be like trying to eat a moving tarantula 6 times a day and 3 snacks and at the gas station, reaching over the vat of tarantulas that are squirming around to pay and at the store, aisles and aisles of moving around tarantulas. That's how uncomfortable life can be for somebody who's experiencing dieting obsession, health obsession with food, all of those things. It can be like a phobia and an obsession at the same time. And each time it's just as powerful as if I was to eat live tarantula 6 times a day. That was my best analogy until this book. And now I feel like, you know, if somebody wants to understand more about the complexity and the beauty and the empathy of people struggling with this stuff, it gives real humans, not ideas.
And that is wonderful because I think it's so, they're so misunderstood, and it's nobody's fault that they're misunderstood. It's like, if you haven't experienced it or haven't struggled, you don't understand, you don't get it. And that's, for anyone out there who's listening, who is a support person, that's okay. Just,
oh yeah,
don't know. And that, you know, just I think a lot of people do struggle. They're like, what do I say? What do I not say? What do I do? What do I not do? And like, aren't they fine if they're just eating again? And like, they're fine, right? And it's like, no, not really. It's like, there's more to it. It's complicated. And, you know, there's a lot to understand. And, you know, I have so much, you know, empathy for people who just are like, so confused and want to know more and just don't know what to say, right?
But right there, you just nailed it. Wanting to know more, one tiny, tiny change can change the entire way of relating. So just wanting to know more and actually looking up something or learning something can speak volumes and make really positive change. You don't have to be perfect in the, oh my gosh. In fact, everything about healing here is probably about not being perfect on all of our parts. What the heck is perfect anyway? It moves and morphs and runs away right when we think we might have touched it.
Perfect ever.
Never.
All right. Well, Ali, you are such a joy to talk to. We could talk for hours and hours and just have the longest podcast ever. But you know, you've been talking about this book, and so people are probably listening going, what is this book? How do I find it? What do I how do I find you? So if anyone wants to find your book, read it, or find you, work with you, how can people find you?
Thank you. All the socials for the book are at Meaningful Read, and that's full with 2 L's because that's intentional, meaningful and meaningful. So Meaningful Read. Also meaningfulread.com is a website that I made. I'm trying to keep it up. And then for me as a therapist, my website is therapyhelps.us. So that's supposed to be like the sentence, hey, therapy helps us. But it's therapyhelps.us. And just really been a privilege to be on here today and explore this with you. And thank you for the topic of secrecy. There's just so many ingredients to break down and look at. And again, one thing that feels tiny for change can be life-changing. So secrecy is something to look at. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And for anyone who did not get any of that written down, it'll be on the show notes on the website. So make sure to go over there after the show. Ellie, thank you so much. This has been such a joy. So sure we'll be in touch. And thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.